If you heard the phrase, in these unprecedented times, once last year, you likely heard it 1,000 times. But of all the industries and workers impacted by COVID-19, the movies and the movie exhibition industry was likely hit hardest. No large gatherings brought a standstill to on-set productions and the release of films in movie theaters. The lower-paying trade jobs of Hollywood were nearly wiped out overnight, as were the service industry jobs of local and international theater chains. The carefully orchestrated promotion and release of films was upended, and the industry has been struggling to find a way to move forward ever since. It would not be hyperbolic to say that 2021 may be the most pivotal year in cinema history. By cinema, I mean the medium and the places where the media can be seen. This is the reason for this new limited four-part series presented by Binge Movies. Each quarter, a different Hollywood outsider and I will document and discuss the inside of the industry in real time. Four episodes, four outsiders, four questions. I'm Jason from Binge Movies, and this is The State of Cinema, Quarter One. First guest is the Liddy Wan. She's a contributing member of Binge Movies and the host of a brand new podcast called Screen Run. After a few of our recording sessions for the regular show Binge Movies, the Liddy Wan and I spent a significant period of time discussing what was going on in the industry, both for us locally, her in Florida, myself in Akron, Ohio, to discuss what movie theaters were open, what weren't, when would we feel comfortable going back to the theater, and what was the industry doing to try to keep up. When we recorded this conversation, it was before the announcement of the ArcLight Theater's permanent closure. You won't hear us mention it because, as I said, it happened before we recorded the podcast. But it does tie into some of the predictions we made on this episode. I hope you find this conversation insightful and interesting as a movie lover. And if you do, would you please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast? It helps out not only this limited series, but the main show, Binge Movies. Both Liddy Wan and myself would love to keep this conversation going on social media. Let us know what you think about our thoughts, and let us know what your thoughts are on the state of cinema here as we are in now the second quarter of 2021. You can tweet us at Binge Movies or the Liddy Wan at the Liddy Wan. Let's go to that conversation right now.
. 2020 was rough as far as being someone who wanted to go to the movies once a week, every single week. I lived there. I was there all the time for every Thursday night release. If I didn't have anything to do Sunday or it wouldn't stop raining, I'd go back. If I was bored on a Tuesday, I'd catch something I'd missed. I was at the movie theater all the time. I took full advantage of my AMC A-list membership. There was nothing I wouldn't see. Because I had that A-list membership, it removed any consideration of was the movie quality. Nope, it was there. I was going. And they gave me the option to pause it in March when everything started falling apart in 2020. And the last thing I had seen was The Invisible Man. And then I didn't go to the movies for 6 months. And I know that's not as long as most people, because I live in the insane place that is Florida. So we opened the theaters back up in August and I went and saw New Mutants. And then I saw Tenet twice, but I canceled my AMC A-list because they no longer offered the option to pause it after theaters reopened in August. They said, no, you could do that once and you did it. So now you either have it or you don't. And there was no way I was going to be able to see three movies a week. There was nothing to see.
Where is the industry as we speak? We just finished quarter one. Where are we right now from your assessment as a movie podcaster, movie lover, movie fan, someone who has their finger on the pulse of not just, plot and narrative and structure, but the industry? Because that's the thing. Behind all of these escapist films, there's an entire industry of working class people.
So it's hard because it really is all over the place. There are parts of the world where they just don't have this problem of COVID anymore. New Zealand is just chill as can be. China has been back to normal for months now. So theaters there are open.
When you look at the numbers in some of the articles that have come out through Variety, there's, I think, around 23 to 25% of all movie theaters in the United States have not reopened since March of 2020.
Yeah.
We're now in April of 2021. So as we look at the news of the moment, this is my second question, the news of the moment. Mm-hmm. Are those theaters ever going to reopen?
They can't all reopen. It just doesn't seem possible that all of them will come back. I think there's going to be consolidation in certain areas. I mean, it's not going to be possible right now. Some of those movie theaters too, right, are the cool, trendy dinner in a movie place. Could you imagine sitting in a movie theater and eating dinner right now? How disgusting does that sound?
I don't know. That's the thing, you know. There's the thing that you and I are comfortable with doing, but then you look at the news, it seems that there's a lot of people who have no problems doing anything and haven't at any point. So
yeah.
I would love to be able to say, I don't think that those sort of theaters are going to bounce back, but yet, I mean, look at Texas, look at your home state, look at areas of Ohio and elsewhere that have become a little bit more laxed, and people are just going crazy and really, you know, pushing against. They're going to, even people who are maybe were really on lockdown last year, I think a lot of the constraints are being cast off this year.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting in particular about people returning back to things they haven't been able to do, whether it's safe or they're just exhausted from trying to be safe and they've given up, whatever it is that really the thing that you're going to rush out to do? Is the more expensive version of the thing you've been doing for the past year, which is watching a movie? Because that's what people have been doing at home. And I would think you'd be going back to bars, to theme parks, to concerts.
Yeah.
A movie theater, unless you're one of us, unless you're like one of these people who's like jonesing for a movie theater, if you're just the average person, that's the last place on your list that you are just desperate to get back to normal to. Because that's just what you've been doing all year to kill time, is just watching movies.
I think the industry doesn't know what people are going to do. And so you're seeing all of this hedging because you have the health restrictions, which is, you know, essentially these companies, the theatrical arm of the industry, right? You have the production and distribution centers who are just wanting, they're creating content. They have shelves full of content from last year that didn't come out.
Right.
That they need to offload this year, and even at a loss at this point, because it's just, they just have to get it off the books.
Right.
And then you have the exhibition arm of the industry, which is what we're really kind of honing in on this conversation, which is movie theaters, right?
Right.
And the 23% of movie theaters that have not reopened are not because of health restrictions. They're because they're lost. They don't have enough market share. What that means is, so they're looking at the Cinemarks, the Regals, the AMCs, and the smaller franchises. These mega corporations looked at their movie theaters and they looked at who had the highest operating budget with the lowest number of ticket sales per screen and the lowest number of screens. Overall, the least opportunity to make money in any geographic area. And they selectively chose not to reopen those.
Right.
So you may have, if you live in an AMC zone, one of your larger AMCs in your area may have been open for months now, But you'll notice a lot of the smaller or older AMCs have remained closed. And I just don't think at this point, I don't see those coming back.
No. No, I mean, where I live, and I'm an AMC loyalist, not because it's any spectacular experience, but purely because I had A-list. So I never looked at going anywhere else. But I had at least four or five theaters within a 35-minute driving area to choose from any single time a big movie was coming out. When the big Marvel movies and the big Star Wars movies were coming out, I'd get together with my friend who also had A-list, and you know, he'd check the one up north and I'd check the one down south, and we'd have multiple theaters that we were checking to make sure we could get that Thursday night. There's no way they're all coming back. There's just not.
No.
It's just not going to happen anymore. It just doesn't work.
As you are more than likely to notice, I was having technical difficulties with my microphone, so my apologies. Where we go at this point in the conversation is at the end of quarter one, Time Warner and movie pundits were looking at Godzilla vs. Kong as a box office litmus test and potential miracle. Would a fourth installment of a middling franchise be the thing the global box office needed, even though in North America it was also concurrently going to stream on HBO Max? Those behind the film and those media pundits who watch this sort of thing in the industry began to talk about something called social media engagement, as if that was the new measuring stick by which we could determine whether or not a movie was going to be successful. Is this real or more Hollywood accounting?
With everything that's happened in 2021, where all of their release schedules thrown off, where the theaters have not been able to screen a fraction of the total number of showings that they offered, you know, just a year and a half ago, with 23% of movie theaters still shut down, with the theaters that are opening at 50% capacity, and of the total number of theaters that have reopened, 43% of that have opened since January of 2021. So the vast majority of movie theaters across the United States were not open in 2020. Mm-hmm. Can you, as an industry, bank on quote-unquote social media interest? Does that translate to any amount of money in the real world?
No. And I have some personal frustration with that whole concept to begin with, because I work in communications, I deal with social media, and when any company ever, you know, touts about how many impressions something had or their hashtags usage, I'm like, that's not dollars. Stop pretending that's money. Stop pretending attention equals profit. And especially when you have something like Godzilla versus Kong, where I streamed it. I tweeted about it. Did you count that as a success? Because I was already paying my bill for the service anyway.
And I think a lot more people, would be my guess, are engaging that film because it's just there for them. They don't have to spend more than 1 month of HBO Max just for a ticket to go see it once.
Yeah. It's just more accessible, and it's been a year now, so it's not a novelty. It's just purely an expectation. It's, yeah, you're going to give me the content from my couch, and I'm going to take it here because I get everything here.
So if I'm the movie theater industry and I see my window closing, my exhibition window closing, and I see my exclusivity rights diminishing, and I have no leverage whatsoever, and I see my market share decreasing, and I see 23% of my theaters potentially never reopening, as I head into the second quarter of this year, I'm panicking.
Yes.
It felt like we hit a quantum leap in the death of movie theaters But as we sit here in 2021, I think that it's a death crawl. It's a death march, and not necessarily as catastrophic as we thought last year. Or do you think I'm off base based on your research?
So I actually had the prediction conversation on a show last year. And we talked about, I think this was maybe in March or April, like, will movie theaters come through this? And they were pretty optimistic, but I was just so skeptical because movie theaters were already on the struggle bus, which is why they needed to offer me AMC A-list so that I would be loyal to AMC, because I'm a movie fan. So I just want to see that movie, and they need to make sure I see it with them, because they need me to buy their overpriced popcorn, and they need me to buy their candy, and they need me there. They don't care what movie I'm seeing. They just need me there.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to introduce that option to keep me loyal, to keep me as a customer. But they were already facing being supported by these tentpole movies. Like, they're a tentpole for a reason, because they hold the whole thing up. And because, you know, Marvel's going to be on 80% of the screens when it comes out, and then the second weekend, 70% of the screens. It's carrying everything. And if they need to do that, they need to have these sold out shows. They need to have packed weekends. They need that just to maintain. They're not going to get that anymore. So the whole thing falls apart. And I didn't think, okay, this is the end of movie theaters. They'll be gone for 20 years and then they'll come back as this retro cool thing. But it won't be the same as it was. There's too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
The structure of the overall business model needs to change. And I don't know that they've settled on what will be the change. But I think the first thing we're losing is the family movies, right?
Yeah.
Because it's cost prohibitive to take your family to a movie theater. But while you and I don't want to spend $40 to watch Raya and the Last Dragon, those parents at the end of the week want some peace. And yeah, they will spend $40 to shut the kids up and watch Raya and the Last Dragon. And it's still cheaper than if they were to take them to the theater and see it. And right, they'd only see it once in that theater. So it's worth it for that. And I think who goes to movie theaters is going to start changing. And how many of them there are is certainly going to start changing. But I don't think it's just a bygone thing for sure. It's going to just have to shift dramatically. And I don't think they've found the footing yet, but there's still plenty of time. We're not done with COVID. There's still plenty of time left.
What do we need to be on the watch for the second quarter?
So I kind of have a couple of things I'm interested in as Q2 takes shape. First of all, the fact that Godzilla vs. Kong is projected to be the fourth biggest opening in China so far this year, behind three Chinese films, is, I don't think it's to be ignored. I think audiences in China have taken some time away from big, dumb American box office productions, and they found their own movies. And you know, the way that a movie series like Transformers could just come out and just plan on $1 billion from China, and whether or not it was number one in the U.S., like, honestly, sometimes a lot of the times it was, but movies could bank on the Chinese box office floating a certain amount. And if they are kind of over our shit, is that going to change what sort of movies are coming out of these big studios?
Well, here's the big question that I've been asking for the last few years, which is, as we've seen the budgets of these movies, like a Transformers or like Godzilla vs. Kong, just keep ballooning and ballooning and ballooning. Yeah. And the logic was always, well, yeah, it costs $200-$400 million to make this movie, but it's going to make $1 billion. It's going to make $1.25 billion. It's going to make $1.5 billion or whatever. And it has to have a big budget. You know, you have to make, you know, spend money to make money was sort of the logic. That's a bubble that seemed it was inevitably going to have to burst. And the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the Blumhouse model, which is their movie cost $1 million or $15 million or $20 million towards the high end.
Yes.
And if it grosses $100 million, it's actually banking, pocketing more money for everybody. Then the billion-dollar movie that the is going to get written off through Hollywood accounting, right? And so, I think the only person, I think the only group that is really needs those big tentpole movies are the theatrical chains.
Yes.
Because that's what's going to get the casual viewer. It's going to put butts in the seats, because you're exactly right. They need the casual viewer, because the hardcore movie person is going to be in that theater regardless of what, like, regardless of what's showing. They need to convince the person who only goes to the theater two or three times a year to spend that $50, $60, $7,500 for Transformers or for the next X-Men movie or for the next Marvel movie or the next Pirates of the Caribbean or whatever the franchise is. And they need that around the world. With HBO Max and a lot of these production companies now shifting to their own streaming service, Viacom with Paramount Plus, Amazon, Netflix, more kind of sort of indigenous, HBO Max. Now we've got Peacock, and I imagine they're going to eventually start producing their own films, because it's Universal's behind them, NBC Universal. Now that you're essentially they're subsidized through subscriptions, does it make sense to spend $400 million on a movie that just comes for the overall $14.99 or $4.99 or for free with advertising? I don't know that that makes sense even for the studio anymore, especially if the Chinese market or these foreign markets are no longer responding.
Exactly. If you've lost that guarantee of everyone in China is going to go see this movie and, you know, it's going to be the thing that brings in those casual moviegoers, instead of having to make a movie to sell tickets, you've sold subscriptions and you have to deliver content. It's completely reversing your business model. And so it has to impact how you budget for what you produce.
It has to. You know, when we started the podcast, you know, former host I, Pat, we were looking at some of these big franchises and we kept coming to the same question, which was, who is watching these movies? And one of them was, you know, kind of in the later years of our run, we did the Resident Evil series. Mm. And we did a retrospective, we did a ranking of that franchise, and they made hardly any money domestically. They were middling returns at best. Some of them did better than others, but a lot of them, they made like seven or eight of them, and they're getting ready to reboot the series and do it again. And the question, we like, who is this for? If it cost a couple hundred, $100 million to make, and it's making 120 domestic, that's not a profit. It's because it was making $700 million in Asia or elsewhere, other territories. It did very well in Russia. It did very well in, and after a certain point, it started being subsidized by Russian money, just like Godzilla versus Kong was subsidized by Chinese money, right? So, that's what's going to be interesting is we've got some big movies in this, allegedly on the slate, or movies that at least are being pushed as being big. Mm-hmm. For the second quarter, the one thing I don't understand is if I'm HBO Max, if we're Time Warner and we have Mortal Kombat in the can since 2019, probably, because it was supposed to come out in 2020. And all we have to do is push a button on a server for it to show up on people's apps on our platform that's proprietary to us. Right. And we announced the date. Why now twice in a row with Godzilla and now with Mortal Kombat are they pushing these dates back by 1 week? What difference does a week make?
Honestly, I can't figure out why they're pulling this, but I have to imagine that it is sort of buying time, right? So a week doesn't really feel like much. Mm-hmm. I think Godzilla versus Kong went from Friday to the next Wednesday. It wasn't even a whole week. It was like a very odd, wait, why'd you do that? But if they start pushing everything a week and a half all year, okay, well, you've just bought yourself another quarter if they keep doing this.
Okay, so I think you're onto something. So the Kong move, the Godzilla Kong move, shifted it from the end of quarter one to the first of the second mm-hmm. quarter. So yeah. really, it's just shifting the balance sheet because they can yeah. say, basically, quarter one was a loss. And even getting 100 and some million in China and even getting XYZ social media interest, it would reflect poorly to shareholders. So you might as well just go, the whole quarter was a loss. But the second quarter, look at this amazing gain we had.
Yeah, look at what we did.
So what it does is, it creates a seemingly a positive trajectory, which is going to yield, hopefully, more people buying stock, because ultimately this is about shareholders. And, oh, well, we're past the worst of COVID. Yeah, the beginning of 2020 was a loss, but they didn't really have anything on the slate. As soon as the first big movie comes out, look at the percentage increase, right?
Mm-hmm.
That has to be part of it, right? Is that we're looking at balance sheet voodoo.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and I respect the game. I do the same thing when I'm buying something. I'll wait until the first of the next month so I can put it on the next month's budget. I did that today. it's a good move. It makes you feel good about the moves you're making. And they are beholden to shareholders, like you said. They have a board to report to. They've got to show that they're making good choices and that things are trending positively. So you don't want to win right at the end of Q1. You want it at the start of Q2.
Yeah. Rebecca Rubin, in one of her articles where she was talking about the Mortal Kombat pushback, it was also a Variety article. An industry unnamed source said to her that the thinking behind moving Mortal Kombat back a week was that it's also going to open in theaters wherever mm-hmm. in a limited release in the United States and wherever else. And they didn't want to cannibalize the box office because they're essentially the only thing in the box office right now for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so what it seems to be is they kind of want to sprinkle distantly enough apart from each other these giant movies or movies they think could be giant. And the hope is that if they separate it enough, that enough people will go be able to see Kong and they'll love the experience so much of being able to be back in theaters that then they'll want to do it again in the next month and a half. And but they'll have enough time to where they won't feel like they're being price gouged or whatever. And so they won't have to choose between, oh, well, there's two movies come out and I can only really afford to see one. So it justifies. And also by pushing it back, it also probably gives, even if it's just a week, another little boost to more of that second quarter. So it's now you're firmly into the second quarter by the time Mortal Kombat comes out, because now it's moved to the end of April. Mm-hmm. So now you can be like, well, here's us at the beginning of the second quarter. Here we are more towards the heading into the middle. We're doing great, you know. And I think so. I think it really is pushing numbers around, trying to keep the ship from sinking. I'm not sure. When I think about what should we be on the lookout for the next quarter, I think the thing to look at for the next quarter is the casual viewer, the casual moviegoer. Does the casual fan return to in-person theatrical film, or do they stay home? I think if we're looking at the first of the end of the second, first part of the third quarter of the year, and we're not seeing numbers going up for some of these big movies, I don't know that audience is coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be really interesting to see too, because like we just talked about with shifting Godzilla versus Kong to kind of the opening of Q2, they moved Black Widow to the opening of Q3. Even though that movie was supposed to come out in, was it March or April of 2020? We're so overdue, but it ripple affected, right, all the other Marvel movies. So I think Disney's really got to be banking on just the sheer desperation to go see a Marvel movie in the theater again. And they're hoping that will support things continuing to come out in that way.
By putting out so much Marvel content, though, on their streaming service between WandaVision, which certainly, because it was in a dead time of the year during the first quarter of the year, I know that's mm-hmm. TV, But will that satiate casual fans enough to be like, I've watched 20 hours of Marvel content. I don't need to, I'll wait for this to hit VOD. Or, you know, because the Marvel hardcore fans, you being one of them, if they can, will probably, if it's safe, see it in theaters. Will families go for Black Widow?
I'm not sure, because they've really timed it so that they're breadcrumbing the shows to end by the time Black Widow comes out. So if you want any more, I think the Loki show will be done by then. So they've really dragged it out so that it will be the next thing. It will be the last thing that you get for the year, because they've pushed everything. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know that that's a movie that like would drag families to the theater anyway. It's an action movie. It's an odd thing. It's a lot of pressure riding on that movie. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen. I mean, I know I'm one of those people, like, if I'm not vaccinated by the time Black Widow comes out, which I hope that's not true, I'm still going to see that movie in a theater, not because the biggest corporation on the planet needs my money, but because I'm not going to be part of the low box office numbers for only the second female-led MCU movie we've ever gotten. It will not be my fault that that movie underperforms. I will go see it just to make a point. But I'm not a normal person. So they can't bank on millions of me.
What's your prediction for 2021? When this is in the history books, when we look back on what do you think the state of cinema will be by the end of 2021? What will this year be remembered for?
I think 2021 is probably going to be the recovery that wasn't. I think it will have been, everybody will be really bullish on like, movie theaters are back open and we're back and the popcorn's popped and we're ready to do it, folks. And I just don't think people are going to flock back to it the way they're going to flock back to other things, because it really just is. If you strip all the nostalgia away, you strip away like the romanticism you can have about going to the movie theater and what that means and what it's meant to people who have grown up going to the movie theater and all of that. You take all that away, you're sitting in a dark room watching a screen. And that's all I've been doing for 400 days now. So I'm going to go back to it because it means more to me. But I just think it's low on the list for people to run back to. And by the time the outside alternatives aren't really viable based on the weather, are you going to want to go do that again? So I think it's going to be really challenging for the theaters to bounce back the way that a lot of other things are going to be able to bounce back. There just isn't a lot of adjusting that they can do. They're working on long timelines with their schedules, with their projects. They're working on massive budgets from movies that were made in pre-COVID times. And they can't be as flexible with how they deliver their product. Their business is sitting in the dark near a bunch of strangers. And that seems foreign now.
A special thanks to my guest, The Liddy Wan. You can find her on Twitter at The Liddy Wan. You can find her new show, which has a couple episodes already out, on all available podcast platforms. If you have feedback for this new limited series, and you want to keep the conversation going, find us on Twitter at Binge Movies. You can send your emails to bingemovies@gmail.com. I'd really love to hear from you. I promise you that next time will sound a little bit better.